Hello and welcome to the Aware Parenting Stories podcast. My name is Joss Golden and I'm so happy that you're here. In this podcast series, I interview people who are passionate about parenting. We talk about many things to do with parenting and motherhood and explore the joys and challenges that we all face in our families. The aim of the podcast is to share more about aware parenting, to inspire us all on our parenting adventures, and to support us all to raise our children with more awareness, connection, and love. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Aware Parenting Stories podcast. It's been a long time since I've recorded anything, and it's just been a super busy time for me, both for work and also some big things happening in my family too. So it's been difficult to find time to fit everything in, but I'm really happy to be back and to be starting some more interviews with some more amazing guests, as well as sharing on some of the things that you send me that you want me to talk about and sharing on some of the other beautiful aspects of aware parenting. So thank you all for listening, and I'm so grateful to you for sharing the podcast, for reviewing the podcast, and for sending me messages to let me know how much you're enjoying it. So thanks so much for that. And today, as you can see from the title, I'm going to be talking about stress and trauma and how listening to feelings with loving support supports our children to release and to heal. And of course, the same is true for us as adults too. And this is such a central aspect of aware parenting. The third of the three main aspects is around reducing our children's exposure to stress and trauma as much as we can and supporting them to heal. So that's really what I'm going to be focusing on. And I had a beautiful conversation with Dr. Aletha Salter in one of the earlier episodes about her new book, Healing Your Traumatized Child. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, I really recommend you go back and have a listen. But I'm going to be just going over some of the basic aspects about trauma and how trauma shows up in our children's behavior and how we can support them using this powerful innate healing mechanism and how we can support ourselves in these moments of big feelings for us too. And I hope it will be helpful. So I'm going to start off just by going back over some of the basics that Dr. Salter outlines in her book, Healing Your Traumatized Child, which of course is part of her other books as well. And in this book, which I highly recommend reading, she goes through and explains how symptoms of trauma are often misunderstood in our culture, how trauma is often misunderstood in our culture, and how the behaviors that our children engage in when they are attempting to heal are also often misunderstood. And she describes how when we have a clearer understanding about trauma and about healing, it makes it much easier for parents to recognize when our children's behavior is showing us that they have experienced some trauma and how to best support them, instead of just presuming that they are misbehaving or being difficult, children that need to learn to be calmed down, or that there's something wrong with their personality, or that they need some medication. And it's such a helpful understanding because it's really empowering for parents to know that not only is it inevitable that our children are going to experience stress and trauma during the course of their lives, regardless of how much we try to soothe them and regardless of how much we try to protect them from having experiences that are stressful or experiencing adversity. And it's also really empowering for parents to know that when our children do inevitably have these experiences that are stressful or traumatic for them, they are able to heal with our loving support in ways that are innate and very powerful. And she talks about the importance of emotional safety in this process so that our children can feel a sense of connection and support and safety through us, so that they're then able to revisit traumatic experiences in some way and integrate those experiences and reprogram the memories in their brain to be able to let go of the stress and trauma and return back to balance. And I love how she talks about this process often being a very active and loud and messy process.
And it's actually the opposite of us trying to calm them down or force them to calm themselves down. Instead, she describes how it is a process of gradually assimilating and integrating experiences by processing the emotions and completing the survival behaviors that were blocked or ineffective during these original events. So when we can recognize that this is what is going on for our children in the moment, and we can see underneath their behavior that there is some trauma and some accumulated stress and tension that is driving their behavior, and when we can adequately support ourselves so that we're there with capacity to be able to hold space for them and support them whilst they cry and rage and move their bodies and sweat and shout and cry out, we can also offer them, of course, specific types of play so that they can laugh with us. And when we are doing this, we can reassure ourselves that our children are doing exactly what their bodies are designed to do. And we can remember that what is happening is a natural process that is designed to heal for them. And it can be really helpful for us too to remember that big feelings is not just something that we listen to occasionally and then it's done and it's gone. I think big feelings are part of life, ongoing most days. And I see that even if we've listened to lots of feelings, our children will still have lots of feelings to bring us. And of course, the more we listen, the less of that accumulated tension they have. But their ongoing experiences day to day that are stressful and difficult also need to come out in these ways. And so I think it can be helpful for us to change our expectations, not thinking that somehow we're going to offer our children aware parenting and listen to their feelings, and then it's all going to be done. And they're always going to be back in balance and cooperative and loving and back to their normal homeostatic, calm, centered, connected selves. But actually, it's a ride and it's a roller coaster journey with ups and downs that are often part of the process. And so with that in mind, it's easier for us to learn to welcome their feelings and to move in and support them in those moments when they're bringing their feelings to us, rather than imagining that it's something that we just have to get through, wanting them to stop crying as quickly as possible so that we can move on. And it really does require us to rethink crying, the purpose of crying, and our response to crying too. And this isn't always easy because there is this big cultural misunderstanding about the purpose of tears. And frequently, many people in our culture, particularly those who don't understand aware parenting, they often feel quite uncomfortable around feelings and the expression of feelings. And that might be us too, in relation to expressing our own feelings. And crying in babies is often something that our culture views as an expression simply of immediate need and something that we need to soothe. And this can be really confusing for parents. And I love how Marion's recent book, The Emotional Life of Babies, goes into this in so much depth and supports us to understand that crying in babies and young children can be used to communicate to us an unmet need, such as hunger or discomfort. And then, of course, when we meet that need, the crying will stop. But if our children also have a second reason to cry, which is when they are stressed and upset, and there is no immediate physical need. So we really need to reassure ourselves that we can distinguish between the two of those and then be able to support our children without trying to soothe them or calm them down or distract them or to stop them crying, and instead really welcome the expression of feelings and allow them to offload this stress to return to feeling balanced and calm again for now. And yes, tears and tantrums often create strong responses in parents. Often parents feel fearful or uncomfortable, frustrated, angry, confused, resentful, anxious, depressed, overwhelmed, all of these things in relation to our children crying. And we often feel that we really want to stop our children from crying and having tantrums, either because we want to try to imagine that by stopping them crying, we are somehow stopping them from experiencing pain. Or it could be that our cultural belief is that children who are crying are somehow misbehaving or manipulating, and we want to punish them for those behaviors. And sometimes we feel that our job as parents is to stop our children from crying in any way that we can, because we might feel confused about comfort and believe that we might need to be teaching our children to soothe themselves. That's something that's really common now out there in the big wide world around teaching children self-regulation. And of course, in aware parenting, we generally don't use the term emotional regulation in relation to our children, because it is so easy for that to be confused with externally calming down our child by placating them or distracting them, rather than allowing children to go through the messy process of releasing and coming back to calm by themselves. And I love that Dr. Salter has done so much research, and both of her own and reviewing other people's research on crying and tantrums for the last 40 years, which she shares in her books, particularly in the Healing Your Traumatized Child and in her Tears and Tantrums book. And in both of those books, she talks about how crying is this natural stress release mechanism when our children are supported by a loving adult to release and to heal from the effects of difficult and traumatic experiences. And she describes it as this natural process that children will use spontaneously when the conditions are right, when they feel safe to do so, and when they are able to feel the loving support of an adult with them. So we don't need to teach them how to calm down or how to soothe themselves. We just need to support them into this instinctive behavior so our children can go through some emotions and then return back to feeling balanced and calm. And she talks so beautifully about this, about how when we force our children to calm down and to reach that calm state prematurely by getting them to take some deep breaths or using words that make them feel like they have to calm down and to stop crying, then we're actually interrupting and disrupting this natural healing mechanism. And when we try to make our children feel better, we're not actually making that hurt go away. We're just suppressing their feelings, which of course will come back at another time. So with this understanding, then it's much easier for us to reimagine and relearn that crying and tantrums are not misbehavior at all. And that when we listen to our children's big feelings, they can offload the stress and tension that causes misbehavior. And that, of course, makes their behavior much less challenging. And all this goes on whilst supporting our children to feel connected and loved and unconditionally welcomed in all of the big feelings that they might be bringing us. And now that we have increasingly this understanding about the role of stress in many diseases, and that suppression and accumulation of feelings causes stress and pushes our nervous systems into hyperarousal or dissociation, we can really see that aware parenting and listening to feelings also improves our physical health as well as our children's emotional health. The other benefit, of course, is that crying and listening to our children creates this deeper parent-child connection and attuned attachment, and demonstrates to our children that we will always be there to try to support them when they're in pain, which sets them up with great resilience and clarity as they move into the teenage years and beyond. So it's incredibly powerful thing to do. So I'm just going to talk through, first of all, some of the sources of stress and trauma for children of all ages that our children are inevitably going to be experiencing, regardless of how old they are and regardless of how much we try to protect them from it. I think often people see the title of Dr. Salter's book, Healing Your Traumatized Child, and think, well, my child hasn't been traumatized. But actually, she has such a beautiful way of describing trauma as being so much more than just the big things that we consider to be traumatic. And instead, she talks about mini traumas too. And those are any experiences that our children have which feel fearful or threatening, where they feel unsafe, where they feel somehow in danger. And of course, these experiences can be traumatic for our children, even if they seem quite small to us, because it's all about the child's perception of what's happening to them rather than our understanding. And often I think we can easily presume as parents that our children have understanding of things that we see so clearly, but for them, it might be things that they're experiencing for the first time without a full understanding of it. So, for example, if a dog barks very loudly near a young child, if they're behind a gate, a child might just go into that trauma response because it feels like an endangering experience for them. Now, we can see that the dog's behind the gate and can't actually get to them, but perhaps our child might not have that understanding. And so it feels like a very real and a very stressful and a very dangerous, potentially, experience for them, which will then push their body into these nervous system responses, which I'm going to talk more about in a moment. So it is now increasingly understood that even before birth, our children can experience stress and trauma. And when we live in a culture that doesn't really support mothers in the way that they need during pregnancy, and often the fact that mothers have a lot of their own stress and trauma anyway, it is inevitable that there will be times during pregnancy when our children will experience stress through the stress of their mother. And sometimes father too. And we are now clear that that impacts the baby. And I'm not saying this with any judgment or criticism of mothers. This is about our culture that's not supporting us in the way that we really need to ensure that the stress of the unborn child is minimized by ensuring that the needs of the pregnant mother are met as fully as possible. And of course, as I'm talking through this list of potential stresses and trauma sources for children, I would also love to remind you that this is not about guilt or shame for mothers or fathers. This is helpful for us to understand that our children may have had these experiences, that these experiences may have been sources of stress and trauma for them, and also to remember that, of course, we are supporting our children always to release and to heal through these natural mechanisms, so it can also be undone. Then, of course, birth can be a traumatic and stressful experience, often for mother and for child. There might be physical and psychological traumas that us and our children both experience during the birth process. And often, yeah, the impacts of stress in the run-up to the birth that our families might be experiencing, perhaps there might be conflict in the family, there might be financial stress. You might have older children to be looking after and juggling that, which can be very stressful too. We might be experiencing other big traumatic experiences during that perinatal period. For example, any kind of natural disasters, any kind of grief and loss for ourselves, and other experiences that we would all recognize as being traumatic. And of course, as I said, this now is well understood that stress and trauma in this period will have adverse outcomes for children. Just to understand that has an impact and an effect on a child. And to remind yourself that if these experiences have been part of your child's life, we can support them to release and to heal through these beautiful tools of aware parenting. It's also really helpful for us to be debriefing after birth with the support of an aware parenting instructor or with a suitably trained midwife or doula, in order for us to be able to make sense of our experiences and to let go and to heal from our own stresses and traumas. And that way, we are increasingly able to come back and support our children to release and heal the impact of these experiences too, and are then much more likely to be able to listen to our baby's feelings, to be able to form attuned attachments with them and so on. So then after the birth process, often our children experience overstimulation, particularly as young babies. Even if you imagine looking around you now, everything that you see around you, you are able to make sense of and understand, to be able to categorize and to be able to make connections between things. Whereas for our babies, of course, pretty much everything they see, everything they hear, everything that they experience through their senses is new for them. And often our culture, again, doesn't support this gentle, soft postpartum period of care and connection between mother and child, whilst other people in our tribe who we would traditionally have relied on in this time take care of our other needs and support our older children. So as a result of that, our young babies often experience lots of overstimulation. And even if I just imagine the difference between how my first child experienced the postpartum period that was very quiet and soft and gentle and calm with my second child, who of course had a very different experience as I was looking after my firstborn, was surrounded by noise and shouting when my son was excited and all the things that he was doing to play. And plus she was taken out to all these different things that he was going to because I was looking after both of them at once. So particularly those early days can be quite overwhelming for children. And as a result, that can create lots of big feelings in young babies that they really need to release and let go of through crying with our loving support. Then our children experience lots of frustrations, particularly developmental frustrations, as they slowly start to acquire new skills, learn to move their bodies, learn to walk and crawl, learn to roll over, learn to speak, learn to do all of those things that they are acquiring in the early years. And these are often a source of stress for them as they are acquiring these skills. Our children often have experiences around physical pain or medical issues which are traumatic and stressful for them. Perhaps they require hospitalization. Perhaps they have to undergo certain procedures, which again, yeah, can cause a lot of stress for them, and that they will need loving support to be able to release and heal from. In addition, there might be conflict in the family. It's such a big time adjusting to having children, adjusting to being a parent, adjusting to being parents together with the other parent of your children. And it's often a time of lots of big feelings for us, much of which we weren't anticipating for one moment, and can be quite a surprise at how intense those feelings are for us. And that, of course, also has impacts on our children if they are surrounded by that. And that's a very normal part of early parenting days. And then there might be other big things going on in that child's life during the course of their life that is also stressful. So, for example, moving house is often a big thing that many of us do in the early years of having young children, which can be very stressful for children. Experiencing death in the family is often very stressful for children, and managing grief, our own grief as parents, while supporting our children with their grief can also be extremely stressful. Then, of course, there's all the issues around starting school, going to daycare, managing friendships, managing experiences that might be very difficult in those settings. Perhaps they're on the receiving end of harshness from other children or harshness from teachers. That can be very stressful. And of course, yeah, as I said at the beginning, this understanding in aware parenting that even small experiences that are just unpleasant and feel threatening for children can be experienced as traumatic when we have lots of them accumulated. As our children get older, of course, and move into the teen years, they often have lots of stressful things that they're facing as they slowly start to individuate and become adults themselves, separate from us and separate from the family. Puberty is obviously recognized as a big time of psychological and physiological upheaval, which has a big impact on our teenagers. All the hormonal changes and physical changes starting to individualize themselves from the family, as I said, starting to have big experiences around trying to work out who they are and where they are in the world, starting to have a deeper understanding of some of the things going on in the world that can be very stressful for teenagers, and just managing without the full maturity of their brain to deal with all of the big changes and emotional reactions that they have during this time. They are also experiencing lots of pressure and stress, often at school, around performance, about choosing, about having exams and gradings and so on, around societal pressures about their appearance and anxieties around body image and all of that kind of thing. And yeah, navigating friendships and relationships, starting to have relationships with people too, and managing all the big stress of that. And also while doing this within the context of ongoing and heightened pressure from social media, which in some ways is a good thing and brings connection for our children and learning and so on, but also can be very challenging and stressful for children too. So to come back to Elisa Salter's book, we can, with this in mind, understand that it is a difficult thing, being a child, learning to navigate the world. And when our children have experiences such as these that I've outlined that are stressful, they have two primary responses that Elisa talks about so beautifully in her book, Healing Your Traumatized Child. And I'm just going to go through those again briefly, although I do recommend, as I said, that you listen to that episode of hers. But the two primary reactions in our nervous system when we experience trauma and stress is a hyperarousal and dissociation. So hyperarousal is also known as the fight-flight response, and the dissociation is known as the freeze response. And both of these are survival mechanisms. In the hyperarousal response, we become very active to try to defend ourselves and to escape. And in the dissociation response, we freeze, we shut down, and it's as if we're playing dead almost in order to survive. And both of these responses can occur on a continuum from quite mild to very extreme. And she talks really beautifully in her book about the neurobiology of these responses, and goes through in describing how in the hyperarousal response, our sympathetic nervous system is activated. We get an increase in our heart rate and blood flow to our arms and legs so that we can actively defend ourselves and run away. And we get reduced blood flow to our internal organs, our intestines, and so on. And we have a significant production of adrenaline and cortisol. And all of this response happens automatically when a child feels threatened and needs to defend themselves or to escape. In the freeze, dissociation, shutdown response, we become immobile in response to trauma. And in this state, our parasympathetic nervous system is activated, our heart rate and blood pressure reduce, we release endorphins and dopamine, as well as cortisol and adrenaline. And both of these states are natural states that Dr. Salter describes that we are physiologically designed to go into in order to survive, but these are not states that we're designed to stay in chronically. Our nervous system is designed to be in these states for short periods of time in order to survive, and then to return back to balance through natural healing mechanisms. And there's a beautiful video on YouTube, which I'd love to encourage you to have a look at, which is following a polar bear that is being chased by a helicopter and then sedated and then tagged as part of a process to monitor polar bears and so on. And what's really interesting about this video is that when this polar bear, who's had this traumatic experience being traced by a helicopter and then shot with a dart gun, when it comes back to and wakes up after the researchers have left, whilst they're still filming it, it stands up and it goes through this full, very powerful shaking of its body in order to discharge and release the stress. And then it just returns back to balance and goes off on its merry way. And I think that's quite a powerful indication of these natural processes in action in response to threat. So we can go into these trauma responses right from conception and through into early childhood and then into adulthood and beyond, and can react in these ways when we are experiencing trauma, but we can also be pushed into these same responses when unhealed trauma is somehow reactivated in the present moment. Because this activation of our nervous system leaves like this energetic imprint and coding into our body, and is easily reprogrammed when we have experiences that somehow remind us of these initial traumas without having released and healed from the original experience. And having accumulated lots of mini traumas can also push our children back into these states of hyperarousal or dissociation too. And when our children are in these responses to trauma, they have lots of big feelings often, typically feelings of terror, rage, fear, outrage, grief, powerlessness, overwhelm, confusion, guilt, and shame. And what we can see in our children when we have this aware parenting understanding and we're looking underneath their behavior, it's really clear to us when our children have been pushed back into these states of hyperarousal or dissociation. So behaviors that indicate that our child is in a hyper-aroused state include them being hyperactive, being impulsive, when they're aggressive or violent or destructive, when they are really uncooperative, and when they're very agitated and having difficulty sleeping. And behaviors that indicate that our child is in the dissociation nervous system response include things like when our child is very unusually calm or passive or withdrawn, when they are engaged in self-soothing behaviors such as rocking or sucking their thumb, when they are not really responsive to us or when they're not paying attention. And so when we have this understanding, both of what's going on when our children experience stress and what is going on when they're behaving then in these ways and what that is telling us about them, we are then able to support them in really effective ways to release and to heal. And of course, one of the biggest ways of supporting healing is through play. But today I'm really focusing in this episode on supporting our children to heal through crying and big vocalizations and big body movements and so on. And again, I'd love to just remind you that your children know how to heal and they will do so spontaneously when we recognize what their behavior is telling us, and then we facilitate their healing and allow these natural processes to do their work, doing what their bodies are designed to do with our loving support. And I'm going to talk in another episode about what happens when feelings get stuck, because often that is something that our children experience, and that's usually something that parents experience too, having not had our feelings welcomed and responded to in this way when we were children. So if that's you and you're listening to this and you're having big feelings yourself in response to this, saying, yeah, it's all great in theory, but in practice, it's not really working in my family, then I'm sending lots and lots of love to all of those feelings. And yeah, just wanted to reassure you that I will do an episode in the coming weeks about what to do when these processes aren't happening as they might. And yeah, to reassure you that that is often the case for many of us. So it's helpful to remember that healing from trauma is often a very active process as our children go through and assimilate and integrate these experiences and process the feelings and complete these survival behaviors. It's often noisy and big and can be quite overwhelming for us. And so it requires us to come back again and again to understanding that this is what is going on when they are behaving in these ways. And then we can come back to reminding ourselves again that we can trust that they know what they're doing and that we are really powerful to be able to support their healing. And one of the most important aspects of supporting our children to heal in this way is to ensure that our children feel emotionally safe with us. And there's lots of beautiful information in Marion Rose's recent book, I'm Here and I'm Listening, about how to support safety, how to bring in this beautiful balance of attention. And essentially, really what our children need is all the other aspects of aware parenting to be really in place in order for them to feel this sense of safety and connection to us. So lots of attention and connection, lots of time together, lots of play, not having punishments or rewards, making sure that we support them in any way that we can so that they feel physically safe, doing our work so that we do as little as possible to add to their stress or trauma so that we're less likely to be hurting them or causing them distress through shouting and getting angry, which again, of course, we all do sometimes. And when we do, we have these beautiful processes of rewind and repair in order to, again, support that emotional safety. And it requires us to be ready to listen and to accept when they need us and to be willing to listen too. And again, this is something that Marion talks so beautifully about in her new book. Often we want our children to release and to heal, but sometimes we're not actually willing to listen and to be there to support the big feelings, either because we don't have capacity or because something big is coming up for us in relation to that. And so, yeah, taking time to explore that with support can be super helpful. And often we need to remind ourselves again and again that crying and tantrums are the process of becoming unhurt. So the crying is not the pain. The crying is the release of the pain. And that, yeah, babies and children know how to reach this calm state, and that when we support them, they are able to go through these processes and come out the other side when we are there with them, staying close and paying attention and reassuring them that we're there and that we're listening and acknowledging how difficult the experiences are for them and offering them our understanding. And really what we're trying to convey is this sense that I see you. I understand how hard this is. I care. I love you. And I'm here. And one of the things that is really required of us in this process is to not be interrupting, to not be trying to placate them, to not be trying to distract them, to not be offering advice or lectures, to ensure that we are validating their feelings rather than invalidating their feelings. And again, to not be explaining in these moments, but just to be holding space. The other thing that can be helpful to remember is when our children are having what we call in aware parenting broken cookie moments. And that is when they're having seemingly very big reactions to things that are very small. And we can understand in these moments that they are using a small inconvenience or unpleasantness as an opportunity to offload a whole lot of other feelings that they've been carrying around with them. So instead of seeing those moments as our children overreacting, we can see these as moments where our children are very wisely using it as an opportunity to release and to heal through these beautiful processes of crying. So there's this beautiful quote from Healing Your Traumatized Child where Elisa says, studies of crying in both adults and children indicate that it can function as a homeostatic tension release mechanism to restore physiological and emotional balance after a state of emotional distress. And she goes on in the book to talk beautifully about how crying is so beneficial and how research has shown that crying with loving support has physiological benefits for our children and for ourselves. And she cites some research that shows that after crying with support, children have a much more relaxed physiological state, including reduced heart rate and blood pressure, as well as more relaxed and balanced brainwave patterns and lower cortisol levels in their saliva. She describes a study of children that was done on children requiring hospitalization that compared those children who were able to cry with loving support during their hospital stay and those that weren't. And this study found that children who were able to cry had much less regression behaviors. They had reduced sleeping and eating difficulties, reduced anxiety, reduced nightmares, and reduced learning difficulties. Yeah, she then goes on to talk about how the process of crying actually works and how through shedding tears and shedding stress hormones and chemicals in our tears, we are releasing and getting the stress out of their body. And through making loud vocalizations and big body movements, we are completing that initial stress response where we were trying to defend ourselves, to shout, to keep ourselves safe and to do big movements to run away or to fight. And she talks about how crying with loving support, yeah, releases stress and restores homeostasis. And it supports children to be able to reprogram the memories of a situation where they were feeling stressed and unprotected and in danger. And another quote she says is that while revisiting the trauma, they use the energy that was mobilized by the stress response to reenact the primitive survival behaviors, movements of fight and flight, as well as crying for help. This new corrective experiences allows their brains to encode a memory of successfully confronting danger and bringing protection. Feelings of power, mastery, and completion replace memories of terror, defeat, and powerlessness. Physiological relaxation is enhanced by the shedding of tears containing stress hormones and by the increase in oxytocin during physical closeness with a supportive person. Dr. Salter then goes on to outline all the different elements in her book, Healing a Traumatized Child, that we can use to support our children. One of the things that's also really important when we're trying to hold space for children is to tune in and be mindful and aware of what we're telling ourselves about them in those moments, what we might be telling ourselves about their behavior, or what we might be making it mean about their future, or we might be telling ourselves that there's something wrong with them, or we might be wondering, how come nobody cares about me? Or we might be judging them or judging ourselves. And all of these thoughts are so natural and normal given how we were raised and the cultural conditioning that we were all exposed to. But when we have these thoughts, it's very difficult to come back to connection and presence for listening. So in these moments, either in the moment itself or afterwards, it's helpful to just explore a little bit about what's coming up for us and what we're telling ourselves. And if we're finding ourselves going into judgment or comparison of us or comparison of our children, can we bring in a practice that helps us with that? That might be journaling and just writing down all the different things that we're saying and then going back and looking over that list and thinking, exploring the truth of each of the statements. Or it might be just having a mantra that we come back to. And mine was something like, you know, my children have got big feelings and I'm the woman for the job to support them. It might be something around, you know, it's better out than in when it comes to painful feelings. Or it might be something around reminding ourselves that they're not intending to be difficult or demanding or for it to be hard for us. It's just them in these nervous system responses and needing our help. So that can be really helpful to bring us back to connection and presence when we're finding it hard to stay tuned in when they've got big feelings for us. Some of the other things that we can do to support them in the moment when they've got big feelings is holding them very lovingly in our arms or staying really close physically. So that might be getting down on the floor with them, putting our hand on their back. It might be lying next to them on a bed. It might be holding them in our arms if they're little. It's offering them some kind of tender sort of touch and closeness and physical reassurance of our presence. And then we're trying to just listen closely to what they're sharing and using our own voice, some soft, loving, gentle words to reassure them. We don't want to be saying too much because that can sometimes take them away from the feelings, but we're just trying to convey that we're there, that we're with them, that we will stay with them until they feel better, that we welcome all of their feelings, and that we're listening. We are trying to resist the urge in those moments then to go into explanations or trying to fix it or trying to interrupt their processing or offering comments or judgments or some kind of value judgment about whether their response is justified or not. Instead, we're just trying to keep them with the feelings. So we might gently remind them of what it is that they're upset about. Oh, sweetheart, you really wanted to stay at the park today, didn't you? I'm here with you and I'm listening. And we need to also ensure that we're not bringing in any blame or getting angry and shouting at them. Sometimes it does push our buttons when they are having big feelings. And if that's what's going on, can we tend to ourselves? Can we take ourselves off for a moment? Can we say, mommy's having big feelings, so I'm just going to take myself away? And of course, if we do go into anger and shouting and shaming and we are activated in that way, then we always come back when we've returned to balance to offering them a rewind and a repair and a reconnection. And we're trying to resist the temptation to stop the crying by distracting them and really trying to get into this this vibe and intention of welcoming the tears and welcoming the raging. And if their raging includes some hurtful, angry words that are directed at us, can we try in those moments to translate those words so that we don't take it personally? So if they're saying, "Mommy, I hate you," can we remind ourselves that what they're really saying is, "Mommy, I'm really in pain. Will you stay with me even if I try to push you away?" And if we do find that we're taking it personally, can we give ourselves some love and compassion in those moments and then take this and share it with our listening partner so that we get the opportunity to express the hurt that we feel without it getting in the way of us being there for our children? And then we're just offering them our listening and acknowledging and trusting that they're doing exactly what they need to do. We're trying to listen to them until they get all the way through the healing process and allowing them to decide when they've finished where we can. Of course, sometimes we lose capacity to listen and then we can just say, "Oh, sweetheart, I know you've still got some feelings, but I'm just not able to listen anymore now, but I will come back and listen to you later." And sometimes when we remind ourselves again that we're helping them to reduce the stress and the overwhelm, and that this is a natural recovery process that can help us to have a bit more capacity to listen and to return to that sense of trust. And of course, if listening to our children's feelings is bringing up lots of stuff for us, which again, it often does, that's the time for us to be reaching out for support from a listening partner, or maybe having a session with an aware parenting instructor, or, you know, getting opportunities to share what's coming up for us, what these big things are reminding us of, what we're worried about, what we're concerned about, and so on. And it's really important not to be judging ourselves or making ourselves feel guilty or making ourselves wrong when we don't have capacity to listen, because of course we all have moments like that where it all just feels too much. And yeah, we're then offering words in the moment that work for us. So those words might be anything that conveys a sense of acknowledgement and love and care and understanding, so our children really feel seen and understood and heard and acknowledged. "I really hear how upset you are, darling. I'm right here with you, darling. Oh, sweetheart, I see how hard this is for you. Tell me more. What else would you like to share? I welcome all your feelings." We might reflect back to them what they've said. So they say, "Oh, I hate going to school so much at the moment." We can say, "Oh, sweetheart, I really hear you. You really hate going to school at the moment." And the other thing that can be really nice is to say things like, "Well, thank you so much for sharing with me. I'm right here for you." And that can be beautiful to help them too. And whilst we understand, of course, that listening to feelings is incredibly powerful, and we can see how amazing it would be to be a child who felt safe to always express how they felt and to always know that they would be met with love and welcomed and supported whilst they had big feelings, it is often really difficult for us to listen and to be the rock that they need us to be when they're navigating their storms. And often, as I said, it does bring up lots of feelings for us. And we too have lots of needs to be having opportunities to be crying and raging and sharing and healing from our own trauma too. And most of us have significant accumulated feelings from our childhood that we never got the opportunity to share or to be heard. And often it's really stressful parenting in this way in nuclear families without the support that we need, or maybe solo parenting. So we often have lots of feelings ourselves. And it's very, very important for us to be having opportunities to cry, to be heard, to share, so that we can release and heal for ourselves using the same powerful healing mechanisms that our children have access to as well. So that is also really, really important. And it's helpful to explore a little bit about what our childhood was like. How was it when we were children? What do you remember about your childhood? What was the experience of crying and expressing feelings like for you in your early years, in your teenage years, as a young adult even? And what's it like now? There were probably thousands of times for most of us during the course of our lives where we had big feelings that were shut down, or where we were shamed for having big feelings, or punished or distracted. And so, Yeah, learning slowly to reconnect and to feel safe in expressing feelings, often receiving that external listening and loving and compassion that we have always yearned for can be so helpful for us. And it's really almost impossible for our children to be really releasing and healing in this way unless we are also doing the same. We're on this beautiful parallel journey, as my lovely friend Danny Willow always calls it. This parallel journey together with our children of reparenting and expressing and releasing feelings for ourselves, both feelings about the stress of our current lives and feelings from our younger parts, all while supporting our children to do the same. And really, if we want our children to be able to process and move through and release all of their big feelings, then yeah, as I said, we really do need to be getting spaces for that for ourselves. And, you know, we can't offer our children what we're not offering ourselves. So if we want our children to feel emotionally safe and to not experience punishments and rewards, then it's really important for us to slowly learn to offer ourselves experiences of safety and emotional connection, and for us to not be punishing ourselves in exactly the same way. And, you know, if we want to really be there to offer our children a very different experience to what we received, then we also need to be taking time to tune in and give love and space to all the feelings that we had from our own childhood and the grief and the loss that we experienced then, that we had such a different experience to what we now see children really need in order to be able to thrive. And when we have those messy moments, when we aren't the parent that we want to be, it's also another beautiful opportunity to be reaching out for more support so that we can give love to all of ourselves in this sort of really compassionate way that we're slowly learning to offer our children, and offering that same sense of compassion for ourselves so that we can start to really show up in a very embodied way of compassion and spaciousness and listening and love. And I'd also love to say something more about how we can respond when we do get activated in response to our children's feelings. And often the intensity of big feelings and the regularity of big feelings in our children can be really activating for us to be with. And yeah, we often, in order to stay safe, had to hold back our feelings to avoid upsetting or disappointing our parents, or to avoid being shamed and punished ourselves. So we often have big feelings when we see our children having big feelings too. And what can be really helpful when we get activated in these moments is, after the event, to come back and to do some reflection on what the experience was for us, and to keep coming back to this understanding about our nervous system response and what is happening inside us when we are getting activated at that neurobiological level, and seeing, wow, there's something inside of us that hasn't been processed and healed and let go of, that this current situation with my children is touching. And that is pushing my body back into that hyperarousal state too. And that's really what's happening when we go into these big responses and get angry or upset in that way with our children. So we can understand it's not our fault. It doesn't mean that we're a bad parent or anything like that. It's just that automatic, spontaneous neurobiological process that's kicking in those moments and pushing us into an activated state. And that can be really helpful, because then we're so much less likely to go into shaming, blaming, upsetness at ourselves for having got activated and triggered by our children. And then we can also learn to see that these triggers are actually really valuable information for us. It's a really beautiful opportunity for us to actually get curious about, what is this for me? What is in this for me? What are these feelings here to tell me and to teach me, to show me, or to heal for me? And we can really start, particularly if we're getting support, to tune into all that's there underneath these moments of activation, that are opportunities for us to release and to heal and to let go of our pain, so that increasingly our pain is not touched in quite such a raw and profound way in the moment by our children's behavior. Or perhaps when we are triggered, these triggers last much less time before we return to balance and stay this loving parent that we want to be. Or perhaps we are still triggered by their behavior, but it's much less extreme. So that's what healing is for us, this opportunity to bring some curiosity. And it's often really helpful to have the support of somebody who understands this approach to guide us through this process so that we can get clear and so that we can release for ourselves. And then as we slowly do more of this, we have increasing access to the power of pausing. And initially, when we first start doing this work, we don't have the ability to pause. We're in the midst of big feelings. It's just this spontaneous microsecond response from being loving and supportive to suddenly being really activated and going into our own pain and big feelings of ourselves. But yeah, as we start to understand what's going on inside our bodies, as we start to explore the triggers and what they might be there to tell us and to heal for us, we start to be able to pause in these moments and imagine what that might look for us and bring in these mantras that might be reassuring for us so that we're not telling ourselves unhelpful things in the moment. And instead, we're tending to ourselves with compassion and care so that we can come back to being loving for them. And it creates some space in these moments of charge and activation and big feelings for us where we are able to increasingly respond to our children rather than reacting to them. And of course, all of this requires us to be getting lots of listening for all the big things that are coming up for us so that we can increasingly tend to ourselves in these moments of big feelings for us and be there to be supporting for our children. And it can be helpful to come back to that list of three that we always apply to our children that are underneath behavior, the thoughts, the needs, and the feelings, and apply that same list of three to ourselves in these moments if we're having big reactions to our children's behavior, and come back and explore each of those. So what are our thoughts? What are we telling ourselves? Whose voice is that? Where is this all coming from? Is this truly what we think and believe now? Or is this some kind of cultural conditioning or family conditioning from our earlier days? And getting really clear about what we truly believe now about our children's behavior and what it means and what it's saying. And then, yeah, exploring needs. And, you know, meeting needs both in the moment and more generally. All of us have unmet needs in parenting because we don't have the support that we need to be able to be doing this very important work of listening to our children. But in the moment, can we just tune in and tend to ourselves, even if it's just giving compassion to ourselves about the fact that we have unmet needs in those moments? Or maybe finding ways to meet our needs in those moments. So it might be if our child's having a massive meltdown, can we just grab ourselves a little drink of water so that when we go and sit next to them, we can take some sips of water? Or can we get a cushion so that if we're getting down onto the floor with them, we feel more comfortable and have more capacity then to be able to listen for as long as that takes? Maybe it's like feeling that sense of the ground underneath our feet, or imagining somebody there with us, supporting us with their hand on our shoulder. Or maybe it's imagining us as a rock or as a tree or something to support us to stay centered in those moments. And of course, more generally, can we find small ways to be meeting our needs more than we currently are doing? Can we trust that it really is possible for everybody in the family to have their needs met? Can we take time to do the things that restore us? Can we ask for help so that we get a few hours to ourselves to go and be outside in nature, or to get a massage, or just to sit in the sunshine with a cup of tea and be ensuring that our needs matter and acknowledging for ourselves how painful it is when our needs are not being met? And yeah, the third one is the feelings, which I've talked about already. So, you know, finding moments to check in with ourselves and to see how we're feeling. Maybe reaching out in a voice note to a listening partner to say we're really stuck in some big stuff and we're struggling and we're finding it really hard to find our way out. Can you listen? Can you support me? Maybe that's just being really compassionate with ourselves in the moment about how hard it is to listen to feelings when we were never heard ourselves. Maybe that's exploring in safe places with support from somebody else, the things that are coming up for us in our children's behavior and what that's reminding us of. I find it often really helpful to ask two questions. One is, what am I making this mean, either about me or my child? And the second is, why is this so painful? What is it connected to? What it's reminding us of? And then allowing ourselves to receive support around that process with somebody who's really familiar with this approach, who can explore with us what we needed, what those younger parts being reminded of, what they needed then, what they needed to say, what they needed to hear, and how we can bring more of that to our life now. How we can reassure those younger parts in the moment that they're safe now and that this is a different experience because our children's experience is so different to us. So there's lots to it, and it's not easy. And listening to feelings is often a really difficult thing for us to do. And it's also profoundly powerful. So I'm wondering how you're feeling after listening to this. Wondering if you have any questions. If you do, please feel free to get in touch with me. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts or reflections to share on how this process has been for you, how you've gone from listening. Perhaps initially you just listened to a couple of minutes of feelings and now you're able to listen for 45 minutes or as long as it takes. Maybe there are some times when you have more capacity than others. Maybe there's some feelings that you're more comfortable with than others. I would love to hear if you want to share more. And in the meantime, I just want to send you so much love and so much appreciation for what you're doing for your children to be supporting them in these ways. It truly is remarkable. And when we allow our children and ourselves to express feelings in this way, it's not only really significant for our family, it's also really significant at a societal level for the world too, because all the difficult, painful, unpleasant, awful things that are going on in the world and much of the disease that we see going on around us can be linked back to unhealed trauma and the accumulation of stress. So the more that we are listening to feelings in our children, the more that we're getting support and listening to feelings for ourselves, the more we're going to have a culture that consists of people who are not violent, who are not aggressive, who are not destructive. We can so see that war, environmental destruction, and the suffering of so many people in the world today is the direct result of trauma, both in the people who are leading the world and in so many others. And so we can really remember that by helping our children to heal while they're young, we're really helping the whole world to heal. And the impact and the power of these things that we do in our home to support our children and to support ourselves ripples out in this really profound way to change the world and to change the future of mankind. So I so acknowledge what you're doing, and I'm sending you all so much love. Thank you for joining me on Aware Parenting Stories. I hope you enjoyed this episode. To find out more, please visit my website, www.awareparenting.com.au, and follow me on social media at Aware Parenting with Joss. I wish you much connection and love on your parenting adventures.